All right, we are in a probably familiar place in the Bible this morning. 1 Samuel chapter 17. Anybody any idea what's going on there? Do what? No clue. 1 Samuel 17, that's legitimate. That's legitimate. David and Goliath. This is David and Goliath. Familiar, probably familiar story at least. Probably heard that. But 1 Samuel 17 is where it happens. And going over things in Sunday school and covering 1 Samuel, this is shortly after David is recognized, or at least recognized that he will be king at some point in the nation of Israel. And Saul is on the decline. King Saul is on the decline. And so there's just a couple of verses that kind of sum up this whole chapter. It's a long chapter. And there's kind of a couple of verses that sum it up. Basically 1 Samuel 17, 45 through 47, kind of sum up the whole thing. But there's a few lessons in this, and probably three or four lessons that I want to go over this morning. But to get the storyline, let's read 1 Samuel 17. Start reading some of these verses and kind of see where you're at here. But 1 Samuel 17, starting in verse 1, says, "The Philistines were gathered their armies. They gathered their armies to battle, were gathered together at Shoco, which belongeth to Judah, and pitched between Shoco and Azekah in some place." I don't know what it's called. "And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley Elah, and set the battle in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on the mountain on the one side, and the Israel stood on the mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them. And there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span," probably over 9 foot. "And he had a helmet of brass upon his head. He was armed with a coat of mail. The weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass, give or take, from what I understand, maybe 125, 150 pounds worth of armor. And he had greaves of brass upon his legs and a target of brass between his shoulders. And the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam. And his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron. One bearing a shield went before him." So he had a little armor bearer before him. "And he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel and said unto them, 'Why are you come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine, and you servants of Saul? Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. If you be able to fight with me and to kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall you be our servants and serve us.'" And so this is just to make this whole battle simple, I guess. We'll just make it one-on-one, and whoever kills the champion, if somebody does out of Israel, then okay, then the Philistines will serve. They'll serve Israel, and they'll become their servants and all that. And so apparently the Philistines have a lot of confidence in Goliath, and probably rightly so. This guy's huge. He sounds like a warrior, probably a warrior from birth. Probably has the best, you know, military technology and all of that. But he's gonna embark on some hand-to-hand combat with some tiny Israelite. And so this is the setting. This is what happens. And so this threatening monster against Israel, and this whole scene is set up, and this is where David is going to kind of shine through. And there's going to be several lessons you learn, because David's theology and the way the Bible describes David's understanding of God and the God of Israel, something that we could learn something from. So I'll say right off the bat, the three probably biggest lessons in this, and then we'll cover them in detail. Number one, you've got this giant, and nobody else in Israel is this size, has these physical attributes. So the first thing you're going to see is this superiority of spiritual things to physical things. because Goliath has all these measurements, probably faster, stronger, all those things, all of those things will be subordinate to the God of Israel. This is sort of one of the lessons in this whole thing. So you got this world champion going to meet up with this shepherd who has done some things in his life, but not a whole lot because he's young. And so I think you know how this is going to turn out. But this is the first lesson, really, that God's battle is it's spiritual warfare. And this is something that's going to be carried on into the New Testament, essentially spiritual. It's not bench press. It's not 40 speed. It's not how far can you throw a javelin. It's none of those things in the big picture. Or when those things meet wisdom, they fail. And the wisdom is going to be the superior thing in all of this. The second thing is this battle is going to be much bigger than just David and Goliath. As David seems to have this understanding that when this battle takes place between he and Goliath, this is a stage for the whole world, and all the nations will know that God is the God of Israel, and he's looking for people who trust him. And so David seems to get that. Another thing that stands out in all of this is that salvation is always going to mean defeating some enemy. That there's some big bad monster, and salvation is essentially gaining victory over this Goliath. And it's not just, I mean, it's a real thing, but this is kind of the way salvation is going to be defined. And the fourth thing is leadership in this nation is going to be about who takes responsibility. And I'm going to say more about this because I think our theology says you have this specific calling and you're supposed to do this thing. And, you know, you got probably some personality characteristics that would make you stronger in some points than others. But leadership in God's army is going to be whoever takes responsibility. David's role in this victory is not because the role was made for David and he has this personal calling on his life. And as you'll see, David goes out to this battle and he wonders why no one else has even attempted this. And he's confused. He's genuinely confused about it. So let's go through these. Try to go through these quickly and just deal with all of these kind of lessons that you learn through David and Goliath here. Verses 4 through 11 describe this champion. And really, according to all the physical measurements of Goliath, all the standards, Goliath is superior to every Israelite that is in the army. So Goliath is this world champion. It's mentioned he's a champion. And so what's measured by the world, the strength, the speed, the technology, all of these things, this is what the Philistines put up against Israel. And they say, all right, if you can beat this guy, if you beat this guy, we'll be your servants because you have defeated everything we value. Everything we value is wrapped up in Goliath. He's big. He's strong. He's more violent than the Israelites. He is just a warrior from childhood. This guy embodies everything the Philistines value, and so this is our champion. This is our guy. So verses really 4 through 10 describe these physical attributes, those weapons where you're told how much his shield weighs and his spear weighs and all of the armor he wears weighs and what's made out of, and you're told all of these physical attributes. But in the end, what's going to take place is none of these physical attributes are going to matter. They're all going to be subordinate to wisdom. They're all going to be subordinate to the man that trusts the God of Israel. And so this is the idea. So, but you're detailing all of these physical attributes of how tall he is, just this giant man. Verse 11 shows that really Saul and all Israel kind of think exactly like the Philistines, and this is the problem. They see Goliath as a champion as well. So the Israelites are scared. They're kind of shaken, and they're sitting back, and they don't want any part of this hand-to-hand combat with this guy. And so they think exactly like you would say the world thinks. They think they have the same measurements. They have the same standards. They have the same goals. They have the same ambitions. And so Israel and the Philistines are kind of united in mind. And you say, well, how are they united in mind? They're united in everything they value you is the same thing the Philistines value. The Philistines put forth a champion, and what the Israelites see is a champion. They see somebody they can't beat. They see somebody that is undefeated. And so there, in their minds, it's exactly the same thing, except he's not on our side. But he has all the same measurements that we want. He has all the same things that we're looking for. And what's going to be unique about David is he doesn't see a champion. He sees Goliath as this abomination. And this is totally different than the Israelites' mentality. But the Israelites think exactly like the Philistines. This is why Paul, going way forward in history, in Romans 12, he'll say things like, be not conformed to this world, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. You don't have the same standards, you don't have the same goals, you don't have the same agendas, you don't have the same ambitions. But in Israel's case, at this time, they're all lined up. Philistines put forth a champion, Israelites see a champion. That's what they see, is a giant, a Goliath. And so this world champion sets out there. The Philistines are put all their stock in this man. The Israelites are shaking about this thing. And so as we keep reading verse 12, David was the son of the Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse. And he had eight sons, and the man went among men for an old man in the days of Saul. And the three eldest sons of Jesse went and followed Saul to the battle. And the names of his three sons that went to the battle were Eliab the firstborn, and next unto him Abinadab, and the third Shammah. And David was the youngest, and the three eldest followed Saul. And David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. A little backstory to this. David, in earlier chapter 16, has already been kind of told that he's going to be king. I don't know if Saul knows it yet, but Saul has promoted David into kind of his throne room and kind of made him, he plays music for Saul, and just he's kind of a servant in Saul's palace at this point in time. And so David's older brothers here, they follow Saul out to this battle. David is kind of as the youngest. He's not really old enough for battle yet, apparently. And that's another key ingredient in all of this. He's too young to be drafted into the army. So he's just out there kind of helping. He brings food to the brothers because they're the real warriors. And he brings food out there and all that stuff. And when he's out there, he notices something. And he notices this Philistine has made a threat, and not only made a threat today, but he's been making these threats for days now. And so this is what's said here. Verse 16, the Philistine drew near morning and evening and presented himself 40 days. So morning, evening, 80 times he's threatened Israel and essentially laid down the gauntlet here and said, if you can beat me, we'll be your servants, but if you can't, you'll be servants to us. Verse 17, Jesse said unto David, his son, take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn and these 10 loaves and run to the camp to thy brethren. Carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their 1,000 and look how the brethren fare and take their pledge. A lot of language that may be complicated. It's David is bringing them food and then returning with news of what's going on. That's what he's doing. So David goes out there. In verse 20, David rose up early in the morning and left the sheep with the keeper and took and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the trench as the host was going forth to fight and shouted for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army. So they're setting up to actually fight here. And David left his carriage. And so apparently as they're setting up to fight, Goliath is the one he's coming in and taunting. Verse 22, David left his carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage and ran into the army and came and saluted his brethren. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines and spake according to the same words, and David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were sore afraid. So they set up their battle. Goliath comes out and everybody kind of goes and hides. And then David watches this and he's kind of like, what are we doing? You'll see in just a second. Verse 25, the men of Israel said, have you seen this man that has come up? Surely to defy Israel he came, come up. And it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches, will give him his daughter, make his father's house free in Israel. And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine, taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this? Who is this? This is David's mentality. And this is David's understanding of the God of Israel. And this is David's theology. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? So you got on one hand, Israel. They see Goliath, this champion. They're afraid. Goliath comes out and says, boo, and everybody runs away. David comes out, he feeds his brothers, and he sees Goliath come out and say, boo, and he says, who is this? What are we doing? Who is this guy that defies the God of Israel? Who is this? So David's mentality is completely different than the nation. And this is what's going to make David superior to his brothers and make him king. Verse 27, the people answered him after this manner, saying, so shall it be done to the man that killeth him. And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, why camest thou down hither? And with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? You're abandoning your responsibility, David. I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thy heart, for thou art come down that thou might see the battle. And David said, what have I now done? Is there not a cause? So, all right, you know how you are when you get caught in doing something or feeling a certain way that you probably shouldn't feel or doing a certain thing you shouldn't be doing. And Eliab is David's older brother. David wonders why nobody's addressing this Goliath, why nobody's addressing this Philistine. And his older brother says, what are you doing here? You're just the shepherd. What are you even doing here? And he feels, you'll see a little bit later, Eliab starts to feel, he feels kind of guilty for this. Because of what David says is, who is this guy that's defying the God of Israel? And why aren't you doing anything about it? And so Eliab sort of puts it back on David. This is what we do. We want to justify what we're doing or not doing. We put it back on the other person. Well, who's tending your sheep? Why are you abandoning your responsibilities? Who made you boss over us? What are you doing? And so Eliab is this sort of coward figure that is typical of human nature and people. When they get caught, then they just sort of put it back on the person that catches them. David's he's innocent. He's trying to help in the little ways he can help. He's probably not even 20 years old at this point, just a teenager. And now he's calling out this champion, and Eliab is sort of probably not only feeling guilty about what he's not doing, but he's also wondering, what in the world are you going to do in this situation? I mean, who are you? You're just a shepherd. You're a teenager. You're no warrior. You're nobody. And so Eliab sort of tries to shoo him away a little bit. In verse 30, he turned from him toward another and spake after the same manner, and the people answered him again after the former manner. When the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul, and he sent for him. So David goes around, and he is telling everybody, why are you sitting? Why are we sitting here? Why are we waiting for this? Is there not some reason we should go forth to battle in this? Is there not a reason here? And where are the people? Where are the brave, courageous men of Israel to fight God's battle? Where are they? And so he goes through these army lines, and it looks like he's asking the same questions. Is there somebody that can do something? Is there somebody over here can do something? Somebody. And then word gets to King Saul that David's asking these questions, and Saul's going to call him in and say, okay, well, if you want to do something about it, I'll give you my armor and you can go try. And so this is what happens. King Saul hears about this and Saul calls David into his sort of quarters. And verse 38, Saul armed David with his armor. He put a helmet of brass on his head, also armed him with the coat of mail. David girded his sword upon his armor, and he essayed to go, for he had not proved it. So he puts all the armor on, and he gets the sword, and it's not a gun you've used before. You're just not familiar with this stuff. Probably it's too big for him. And David says, you know, this armor is going to be more of a burden trying to just go out there and fight him. And so he gives Saul back the armor. And this is another part of this whole thing of the mentalities that are so different in this between Israel and David. And so, verse 40, he took his staff in his hand, chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook, put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had even in a scrip, and his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. And this is all kind of compact, all these events taking place here. So David goes out, and he puts the armor, gives the armor back to Saul, takes his sling because he's familiar with it, picks up 5 stones. I've heard it said this is because Goliath has 5 brothers, that there are 4 brothers that David plans on killing. But he takes these stones, takes his sling, goes out, and meets this giant on the battlefield. And this thing doesn't last very long, really. So verse 41, the Philistine came on and drew near unto David. And the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him. It's like, who is this? What are you sending out here? This is disgusting. Verse 43, the Philistine said unto David, am I a dog? Thou comest to me with staves? Like, you're a shepherd, you're going to bring your staff to this fight? Who are you? Who are you? And so the Philistine, Goliath, he's just disgusted by the whole thing. And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give thy flesh to the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field. There's the wartime talk. And I'm gonna kill you, you're gonna die, and the birds are gonna eat your body. All that. Then said David to the Philistine, thou comest to me with the sword and with the spear and with the shield. But I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This is David's theology here. This day will the Lord deliver thee into my hand, and I will smite thee and take thy head from thee. I will give the carcass of the host of the Philistines this day into the fowls of the air, into the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. And it came to pass, when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, that David hasted and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand in his bag and took thence a stone and slung it and smote the Philistine in his forehead. The stone sunk into his forehead, and he fell upon the face of the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with the sling and with the stone, and smote the Philistine and slew him, but there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore David ran and stood upon the Philistine, took his sword, and drew it out of the sheath thereof, and slew him, and cut off his head therewith. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. And the men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines until they come to the valley, to the gates of Ekron, so on and so forth. You get the idea. That's the story. That's what's happened. David says, "You come to me with the shield and the sword, and I come to you in the name of the living God." And he takes his sling, he slings it at Goliath, kills Goliath. It's just a couple of verses, really. Goliath dies, falls down on the battlefield, and then the army shout and all of that. And there are several things that we can talk about, lessons here, but I'll make it quick. The first thing we mentioned is that the nature of the battle is spiritual. That's not just something Paul says in the New Testament. You guys remember in the New Testament, in Ephesians, the spiritual armor, you know, the shield of faith and all that, you know, the shoes of peace and the gospel of peace and the belt of truth and all that. These are spiritual things. And what David proves in this scenario here is that the superior warfare is spiritual warfare. It's superior to all of the measurements of Goliath. He has the sword, he has the shield, he has the technology, he has the strength, he has the height, he has the speed, he has all of these things, and they all come in submission to David yielding to the God of Israel. And so the nature of the battle that tells you where the victory is, tells you where the nature of the battle is. This was the fight. The fight is about trusting the God of Israel versus this worldly understanding of physical superiority. And so David got it. And he gets it so well that he doesn't understand why the other Israelites don't get it. And he's confused by the whole situation. This is something about David being a man after God's own heart. So wisdom, in fact, Solomon would say it later on in Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, wisdom is basically the chief thing. This is the thing. This is the thing that is superior to everything else. And so David gets that. The nature of the battle is spiritual. And that's what's shown here in 1 Samuel 17 between David and Goliath. He physically killed the giant, but that part wasn't really the hard part. I mean, it was literally over in minutes. The hard part was getting over fear, getting some courage, getting to a point where you could see things the way the God of Israel sees things. That was tough. That was tough for the nation. I don't know that they ever got it, but David got it. So number one, the nature of the battle is spiritual, and I'll just say that hasn't changed. That doesn't change with Old Testament, New Testament. It doesn't change over time. It doesn't change old world, new world. It doesn't change. This is something that you'll see in the New Testament with Paul talking about Ephesians, in the letter to Ephesians, about spiritual warfare and things like that. Well, that happened all the way in the Old Testament with David and Goliath. That's the first thought. The second part of this is that this battle is much bigger than just Israel and the Philistines, really. And David seems to understand that too. He understands his place in history. He understands his place, or his nation's place in history, that they're supposed to be a light to the other nations. And so David says that when this happens, when this giant is going to be defeated, the light of Israel will go all over the world, all over all nations. And so here, you know, I mean, here we are in America, 21st century, and we're still talking about this event that happens. And so David understands this well. He understands that the nation is supposed to be a light to other nations. And that it doesn't mean that they have to destroy all these other nations. This just happens to be a nation that is hostile to Israel. But Israel is supposed to be a light to all nations. And David gets that. He understands that much. Jesus would come and he would say, a city set out on a hill isn't supposed to be, you know, it's supposed to shine. A light's not supposed to be set under a bushel, things like that. So all of these are descriptions, really, of the nation of Israel and what it's supposed to be to other nations, what it's supposed to be. The third point, salvation means defeating an enemy. The enemy is obvious in this story, Goliath, and the freedom of the Israelites rests in this little battle between David and Goliath. And so once the enemy is destroyed, there is salvation for the nation now. Not like eternal, not heaven and hell type things. This is just salvation. This is deliverance. Kind of like the deliverance in Egypt and all that stuff. So you'll learn in the New Testament, along this line of thinking, that salvation is always the destruction of an enemy. And what you learn in the New Testament is when Jesus Christ comes, the enemy that he's going to destroy is death. And it's an enemy that no one's ever been able to destroy. And this is the point. The last enemy is death. This is what Paul will say in Corinthians. The last enemy is death. And so this enemy has to be destroyed. And when the enemy is destroyed, there's salvation and there's life and things like that. But the principle is that salvation means defeating an enemy. And then fourth and lastly, we'll wrap it up with this. David is not particularly called to this job. And I want us to get this point really well. We suffer in American Christianity from a sense of individualism. And we think things are all about us. We think things are written about us. And even when we come to this story about David and Goliath, this history about David and Goliath, we ask ourselves sometimes, well, who's my Goliath? Or this is a story about me overcoming a Goliath. And it's not a story about you overcoming a Goliath. It's a history about what we're talking about. It's a history about spiritual things being superior to physical things. It's a history about the nation of Israel being a light to all nations. In several ways, it's a history about this salvation being the destruction of an enemy, and then it's this: when David shows up and sees the scenario of Goliath and the taunting and all of the kind of the cowardly acts of the Israelites, just sort of running away from the Philistines. At the voice of Goliath, David doesn't understand why this is going on. It doesn't make sense to him. It doesn't make sense because he really trusts the God of Israel. And he doesn't understand why the nation sees the same things that the Philistines see. Why do they view this the same way? Why do they view the battle the same way? Why do they view the champion the same way? David doesn't see a Goliath that is a champion. He sees a Goliath that is an abomination. And he can't figure out why the nation doesn't address this. And I say that because this is not about a call on David's life. David just happens to be the guy that sees the need and picks up the baton. And that's the idea. We seem to have this idea in America and Christianity that what's your call to ministry? What's your call to this? What's your call to Christian? What's your call by God? What are you called to do? There's gifts and people are different and they have different strengths and weaknesses. But the one that is going to essentially own the situation is the one that's going to take responsibility for it. the guy that shows up, or the woman that shows up and says, there's a need, why isn't anyone addressing it? And he first asks the question, David first asks this question because he's not old enough to be in the army. And he doesn't understand why military people aren't fighting the battle. Why are these soldiers engaged with this enemy? I mean, you have the God of Israel on your side. How are you not doing something about this? And so David, he asks around because he's not old enough. And eventually, when Saul calls him in, it's kind of the, okay, well, you're the guy. If you're going to take this on, you're the guy then. But he's only the guy because he takes responsibility. Does that make sense? It's not he's the guy because God put his finger on David and said, you go fight Goliath. David is just the guy that picked up the baton and fought Goliath. He's just that guy. So it's not about, again, in this American individual, what's your call to the ministry? How does God call you? How are you going to do that? What's your ministry? What's your ministry? Stuff like that. Whatever your ministry is, it's whatever you take responsibility for. This is the thing God is after. He's looking for someone, according to the Bible, someone to see a need and just take responsibility for the need. And just do what needs to be done. This is why you get these qualifications for elders and stuff in local churches. These people obviously have seen a need. And they've taken the responsibility of that need. And so therefore, these are the qualified people to do whatever the job is. And so in David's case, David isn't handpicked by God to fight Goliath. He isn't handpicked by God to defeat Goliath. David is handpicked by God because he has a heart like God's. And part of that heart like God's is seeing a need and just taking responsibility for the need. And this is what David does. It's not a Calvinistic thing. If you don't know what Calvinism is, don't worry about it. But it's not a Calvinistic thing. You weren't predestined to do this. It's not an individual specific calling thing in David's life. It's just taking the responsibility for the need. So I say that because I'm trying to, the encouragement is found in that. You want to do something for the Lord? You see a need? Do something. Take the responsibility. Do whatever it is the need is. Fulfill the need there. Because this is the idea. And so this whole thing, I mean, you don't ever hear David saying things like, particularly in this story, that, you know, God has called me to this great cause, and God has called me to this great work to do. God has called me to this great thing. You see David asking a question, is there not a cause? I mean, the cause is not personal. It's not a respecter of persons. Does that make sense? It's not personal to you. It's not a respecter of persons. It's just a need that needs to be dealt with. And that's part of this history. It's just a need that needs to be dealt with. It's not a respecter. Goliath doesn't care who shows up. He doesn't care who shows up. He doesn't even think he's going to lose. He doesn't care if it's David. The thing that the God of Israel is looking for is someone to just pick up the baton. Someone to just address the problem. We've obviously got a problem here. Somebody do something about it. Your brothers aren't going to do anything about it. Every time Goliath breathes, everybody runs away. We need somebody who's going to trust the God of Israel and then take up this responsibility and deal with this enemy that is going to make us all slaves and servants and destroy our lives. And so there's really four things in this that you learn. And I mean, there's probably other things, but these four things you get out of this chapter. And I'm learning, and I have learned that And you need to get this when you read the Bible. The Bible is not about your life. It can be instructive, but asking the question, who's my Goliath? Or how am I David? That's not really what this is about. It's not about who's your Goliath. This is a much bigger thing. These needs in life are much bigger than you and me. And they're no respecter of persons. They're just things that have to be done. And you probably look around in life and at your job and in culture and, you know, teams. You look around and you see people abandoning their responsibilities or things that just need to be done. Maybe it's not even another person's responsibility. It's just something that needs to be done. And it's not being done. And David, in this history that has gone around the world multiple times, I'm sure, David says, is there not a cause? I mean, how come we're not fighting this? How come we're not dealing with this? So the whole chapter kind of summed up in verses 45 through 47 when David goes against Goliath, says, you come to me with these shields and spear, and I come to you in the name of God, meaning this is a spiritual battle. And then since nobody else is going to do this, I'll do this. And I'll do it without Saul's armor because it's not about physical. When it comes to wisdom, all the physical stuff kind of diminishes when it comes to wisdom. And so David takes it upon himself, takes on Goliath, and there's your famous story of David and Goliath. And David will say, battle belongs to the Lord. This is spiritual things. And all the things that David endures through this, I'm tempted to go through some of it, but you know, the mocking and some of the making fun of him as he tries to deal with something that the nation won't deal with, and his brothers, and they kind of, you know, fear is contagious, and when his brothers start talking about, what are you doing here? And I mean, he deals with several obstacles. The fear, he deals with Saul, who doesn't know what he's doing, who has the wrong mindset about the whole thing. And so David sort of navigates all of these things. And one of the things that shows up over and over in David's life, it says he behaves himself wisely. He's a wise young man, and then he's a wise older man. Except for Bathsheba and Uriah and all that. But that's another story. That's David and Goliath. I hope that's helpful, give you some hopefully better perspective on this. But where's Ben? You got anything you want to sing?